Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, November 16th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a chilly 46 degrees. It feels a little damp here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Dragonfly Eye, Neural Tinkering, Mental Health, and Slaughterbots. And that's where we ended the show yesterday. I was talking briefly about a new video that was released by the Future of Life Institute, which is a group that is run by Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, just as the new UN meeting was taking place in regards to killer robots. We're going to talk a little bit more about killer robots and swarms and some of the things that are in development right now. We looked a couple days ago at an artificial intelligence that was designed to be mentally unstable. This was the first that I had read about this. And I got to tell you guys, this is still concerning me. So when we dug a little deeper into what this creative, mentally unstable AI was all about, we found out that it was a product called Imagitron, through a company based out of Missouri called Imagination Engines. And when we clicked through and looked at the information on Imagination Engines, we discovered that back from 1997, they had already started doing work with the Department of Defense and some of their contractors to build a control system behind a constellation of communication satellites to hand information off to the military around the world. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that we have this mentally unstable, creative artificial intelligence that is running a control system for a constellation of satellites that has been put up into space. Now, as we've seen quite a number of times here, looking at space and some of the things that are going on with technology, that the military has been working on space-based weapons. And I discovered in some of my research that even back in the 80s, when there was all the hoopla about the Star Wars program, and then Clinton took over from Reagan, and supposedly I had always understood that Star Wars was killed. I found in some of my research that Star Wars was never killed. There was just some components of Star Wars that were maybe slowed down or eliminated, but having the ability to control warfare and target from space has been a big push. And with Obama, if you remember, there were a couple space executive orders that were passed just before the end of his reign. And one was about protecting us from asteroids, of course. And the other one was DARPA. And DARPA had these new space robots that they were working on to be able to go in and help when we have satellites that die, or maybe get rid of space junk, because there's so much space junk up there. You know, as humans, we're just so sloppy. But they have been using these as excuses to get our space race and space command in a leading position. Remember, there is this whole technology race that is going on between countries, the U.S., China, and Russia, namely. And now we even have other countries such as India jumping into the space race. So space is a very important piece of the puzzle. Well, I ran across a story this morning, and it struck me as interesting after we had just been talking about this mentally unstable AI running control systems for constellations of satellites. Because this came out of space.com, BAE Systems, which, if I'm not mistaken, back a few years ago, they purchased another one of the big military contractors, and BAE has become one of the world's largest military contractors. BAE Systems wins a DARPA contract to develop 3D space warfare laboratory. Just what we need. We also found out Elon Musk was working with some of the Air Force Spacecom locations, and that's where he was doing some of his rocket launches, and he was launching some secretive launches. I think there was a satellite for Northrop Grumman and some things like that that we touched on a few weeks ago. So let's read the story out of space.com. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, awarded BAE Systems a contract of up to $12.8 million to develop a digital lab to help U.S. military commanders prepare to combat in outer space, says the company November 14th. The task is to create a virtual space battle zone so U.S. military leaders can better understand the space environment and the potential threats. Military commanders have superior space domain awareness in order to quickly assess, plan, and execute operations in this increasingly complex environment, says Mike Penzo, Director of Ground Resiliency and Analytics at BAE Systems in Reston, Virginia. DARPA dubbed the project Hallmark Testbed, and the technology will help the military, quote, quickly evaluate and integrate technologies for space command and control. Well, as they're letting these swarms of robots go out of F-18s flying through the sky, and we had talked briefly about those slaughterbots, which talks exactly about that very thing with facial recognition technology to be able to autonomously detect a threat and take it out. In the virtual space war setting, commanders would learn how to gain situational awareness, a tough challenge when the action is happening hundreds or thousands of miles above Earth. And awareness in the space domain means tracking and managing thousands of objects that are moving at extreme velocities. The testbed would also allow leaders to practice multi-domain operations, so data collected in space and on land and in the air and at sea and in cyberspace can be combined and analyzed to support simultaneously space and terrestrial missions. What? Cyberspace? I mean, this is crazy. DARPA describes it as a, quote, flexible, scalable, and secure enterprise software architecture that would become a backbone of technology development and experimentation, just like Rumsfeld had talked about in regards to directed energy weapons usage during Iraq. The first phase of the Hallmark project focuses on space situational awareness and command and control technologies, and later DARPA wants to add new features to the system for, quote, realistic scenario-based exercises like war games for testing space command and control technologies against sophisticated emerging threats. BAE will host exercises to collect metrics for the Hallmark's cognitive evaluation team and to identify technologies for future use by the Defense Department's Joint Space Operations Center and the National Space Defense Center. DARPA launched the Hallmark Project in 2016 to support military efforts to hone space warfighting skills. Military commanders responsible for situational awareness and command and control assets in space know all too well the challenge that comes from a vast size of the space domain, and the volume of the Earth's operational space domain is hundreds of thousands of times larger than the Earth's oceans. It contains thousands of objects hurtling at tens of thousands of miles an hour, and the scales and speeds in this extreme environment are difficult enough to grasp conceptually, let alone operationally. Current space awareness tools and technologies were developed when there were fewer objects in space, and only a few nations could even place satellites in orbit, and those orbits were easily predictable. But that situation has changed dramatically in the past decade, with the developing space industry flooding once lonely orbits with volleys of satellite constellations. Ding, ding. And remember those CubeSats that we had read about a while ago? I think they were 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. They're being launched by NASA. And even Elon Musk had taken a few payloads up, and they were going to be for the dawn of 5G and the Internet of Things. Well, there's all kinds of stuff up there now with commercialized space commerce and soon to be, I'm going to say, space tourism. I just saw something the other day that Musk might even be taking ashes to space in the future. Current space awareness tools and technologies were developed a long time ago. And against that backdrop, with there being all kinds of volleys of satellite constellations, commanders with a responsibility for space domain awareness often rely on outdated tools and processes and an incomplete information as they plan, assess, and execute operations in space. DARPA expects the technology will give commanders unprecedented awareness so they can shorten the timeline required to make decisions and take action. And the next phase of the project is a Hallmark space evaluation and analysis capability to be located in Northern Virginia. The analysis center will be used for development, integration, modeling, simulation, and realistic testing of space command and control software processes. So how do you like them apples? We are going to be running the show from space now, able to see a fly on a bumper with our new HD Argus cameras. Well, then there was a story came out in January of 2017. We covered this at the time. The Pentagon just tested drones that can attack an enemy like a swarm of killer bees. Well, how wonderful is that? I talked about the series Black Mirror and the bee episode where they were launching these robo bees, of course, to help with the dying bee population and pollination. But they were also able to be used as surveillance drones. And if you go out to the Harvard Robo Bees website, you will see that they even list that as a capability, as well as pollinators, and they could even be death machines. And that's where we come to Slaughterbots. So the Slaughterbots video, and it's highly recommended that you watch it. I will put it in the notes of the show for today. Slaughterbots video depicts a dystopian future of autonomous killer drones. Produced by an Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking-based organization, the video appears as members of the UN convene in Geneva to discuss autonomous weapons. A graphic new video posits a very scary future in which swarms of killer microdrones are dispatched to kill political activists and U.S. lawmakers. Armed with explosive charges, the palm-sized quadcopters use real-time data mining and artificial intelligence to find and kill their targets. And the thing that they did was they hit them right in the forehead, and they had some sort of little plastic explosive charge inside, and it blew a hole right through their skulls. The maker of the 7-minute film titled Slaughterbots is hoping that the startling dramatization will draw attention to what they view as a looming crisis. Ding, ding. The development of lethal autonomous weapons that select and fire on human targets without human guidance. And that is where we are headed. Maybe even those that are dispatched from outer space. The Future of Life Institute, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to mitigating existential risks posed by advanced technologies, including artificial intelligence, commissioned the film. Founded by a group of scientists and business leaders, the Institute is backed by AI skeptics Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, among many others. The Institute is also behind the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots, which is a coalition of NGOs which have banded together to call for a preemptive ban on lethal autonomous weapons. The timing of the video is deliberate. The film will be screened this week at the United Nations in Geneva during a meeting on the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons. And established in 1980, the convention is a series of framework treaties that prohibits or restricts weapons considered to cause unnecessary or unjustified suffering. For example, the convention enacted a 1995 protocol banning weapons such as lasers specifically designed to cause blindness. And I just saw a story today that police are chomping at the bit to start using theirs. I guess those are already out there. As of 2017, 125 nations have pledged to honor the convention's resolution, including all five permanent members of the UN Security Council. That includes China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The Campaign to Stop Killer Robots is hosting a series of meetings at this year's event to propose a worldwide ban on lethal autonomous weapons, which could potentially be developed as flying drones, self-driving tanks, and I thought we just saw one of those out of Russia, which had artificial intelligence built into it, or automated sentry guns, and that was part of that tank as well. And while no nation or state is openly deploying such weaponry, it is widely assumed that various military groups around the world are developing lethal weapons powered by AI. Advocates for the ban on lethal autonomous weapons argue that there is a clear moral imperative. Machines should never decide when a human lives or dies. The technologies depicted in the short film are based on viable systems that are up and running today, such as facial recognition, automated targeting, and weaponized aerial drones. This short film is more than just speculation, says Stuart Russell, a professor of computer science at the University of California, Berkeley, and he should know, and a pioneer in the field of artificial intelligence. It shows the result of integrating and miniaturizing the technologies we already have, he says. Representatives from more than 70 states are expected to attend the Geneva meeting on lethal autonomous weapons this week. And this is a current story. now I just lost my spot. According to a statement from the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots, I think we need to start a campaign with t-shirts. Representatives from the scientific and technical communities will be stating their case to the assembled delegates, and allowing machines to choose to kill humans will be devastating to our security and our freedom, Russell says in a short commentary at the end of the video. Thousands of my fellow researchers agree, and we have an opportunity to prevent the future you just saw, but the window to act is going fast. So now this is going on right now, but again, back to the story about the Pentagon testing drones that can attack an enemy like a swarm of killer bees was from January of 2017, so don't think this stuff isn't in development. The Pentagon has drones and lots of them, and as of Monday in January of 2017, hundreds of miniature versions of them can work together and attack an enemy like a swarm of killer bees. Now remember, at the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, they have been working on swarm robotics for quite a number of years using bees and ants as their models. The DOD made the news public on Monday, though its Strategic Capabilities Office successfully demonstrated its micro drone technology at China Lake, California back in October of 2016. During the test, three F-A-18 Super Hornets spit out more than 100 tiny Peerdix drones, which then linked up with each other to collectively make decisions and fly in formation. Due to the complex nature of combat, Peerdix are not pre-programmed, synchronized individuals. They are collective organisms, like the Borg, sharing one distributed brain for decision-making and adapting to each other like swarms in nature. Because every Peerdix communicates and collaborates with every other Peerdix, the swarm has no leader and can gracefully adapt to drones entering and exiting the team. The mini drones are meant to be expendable, flying low and offering surveillance capabilities beyond those offered by larger unmanned aerial aircraft like the Predators or the Global Hawks. They also can be used to overwhelm enemy defenses since their numbers and speed make them much harder to track. Saturation is an advantage over the thing it has to defend against. The defender has to take more time and money to defend against it. First developed at MIT in 2013, these drones have been continuously upgraded and tested by the Pentagon, and currently the drones have about a 1-foot wingspan and can fly for roughly 20 minutes at airspeeds of 40 to 60 knots. The Pentagon is working on its next generation design with more advanced autonomy, according to the fact sheet. So there you have it. Swarms of drones that are going to be used against insurgents. Now, I wanted to talk about the robo bees. Talked about the robo bees before. These guys came out of Harvard and the Weiss Institute, which I believe is a collaboration between Harvard and MIT. Flight of the Robo Bee, the Rise of Swarm Robotics. And this was dated February 7th, 2014, guys. This has been going on for a while now. For the repair of the coral reefs to mass pollination, these tiny robots could become an essential part of the conservationist toolbox. Now let's sell it all in the name of climate change. Swarm robotics is a concept that has been buzzing around since the 1980s, but now the technology is starting to fly. The idea is to replace a large, complex robot with a swarm of simple robots to work together to perform complicated tasks that it could not do individually. The environmental applications being explored range from coral restoration and oil spill cleanups to precision farming and even to the creation of artificial bees to pollinate crops. There was a story that came out of Japan about artificial bees today. I'm going to have to find that one. A team of researchers at Sheffield University last year posted a video showing a robot swarm in action working together to push an object toward a target. Dr. Roderick Gross, senior lecturer in robotics and computational intelligence at the university, explains the concept. In a swarm system, there is no single point of failure, and if a unit fails, the whole system keeps on going, so you can't kill it, which makes it very fault-tolerant and robust. And wherever you have a heavy load that a human cannot manipulate by themselves, using a swarm of robots to do the job would be very sensible, or not. It could be in a factory transporting boxes, or it could be in a search and rescue scenario where they send out the legions of robots to find you in the woods. Maybe even a collapsed building, and you need to remove a very heavy part, or working in a contaminated environment. Scientists and designers at Herewood Watt University have been looking at using a swarm of coral bots to restore ocean habitats. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a story back a while ago about DARPA having swarms of underwater robots, and they were going to need mothership submarines. So anyway, they were in here releasing swarms of coral bots to restore ocean habitats. And despite ongoing funding difficulties, Dr. Leanne Henry of the University School of Life Sciences believes that swarm robotics can, quote, revolutionize conservation, unquote. I am mostly a deep sea biologist working in waters deeper than 200 meters, and getting to the ecosystem we study is expensive. So while we were having to maximize our productivity, she explains, coral bots are single purpose, so they only need to follow simple rules. And that means having multiple underwater robots working across a large area instead of a single unit traversing a small area. Whether their job is to restore or simply map or video the sea floor, swarms can cover a far greater area and work when one member's batteries run out. Agriculture is also looking into the potential use for swarms as well. Professor Simon Blackmore, head of engineering at Harper Adams University, works on larger robots that can work in fleets, able to identify weeds and administer micro dots of chemicals, with the result of using 99.9% less herbicides than traditional methods. And he believes that though technology may appear an expensive luxury, they may have wider appeal than the latest generations of conventional farm machinery, such as expensive tractors and harvesters. When you look to countries that can't take advantage of big tractors with smaller fields, I think smaller robots might have a bigger impact around the world than big machines, and you'll have surveillance in every country and in every field, even in the rice paddies. And in the whole of Asia, the average field size is about 1 acre, and there is a significant middle area around the world of smaller farming systems where if robots are made cheap enough and reliable enough, it would actually be applicable. Perhaps the most famous and controversial is the swarm project to date is Harvard University's RoboBees, aiming to find an artificial solution to the pollination to address the current decline of the global bee population. Here, the robotic swarm is attempting to replicate one of nature's greatest swarms, but even setting aside the ethics of attempting to replace nature's pollinators, the idea may remain impossible. Energy density means that I am not aware of any power supply that could go into a bee-sized robot that can make it work more than 15 seconds, Blackmore claims. But don't worry about it, because they're working on it. Gross admits that the most exciting environmental applications for swarm robotics may remain some way off. Much of the research done on swarm robotics is still in the laboratory, but I believe in 10 years, we'll find more and more swarm systems having actual applications, and it may start in a more controlled environment like a factory, and then it may go further. Monitoring how an oil spill spreads or levels of pollution in cities is already possible through sensors, and remember we talked about smart dust. To monitor is the first step, and the next step is to change and influence the system. So to start modifying your environment, he defends the RoboBees, urging people to think less in terms of pollination and more about engineering problems it attempts to solve. They want to push the frontiers about what a robot can do with very limited computation. Higher energy power sources, for example, would be useful for a wide range of applications. One day, swarms of robots could form part of the conservationist toolkit. Drones and swarm robotics could significantly aid conservation work in terms of an Earth system monitoring, for example, just like smart dust. And more broadly, this technology, like many others, biotech, nanotech, and synthetic biology, yes, all could be the end of the human race, could be very useful if used to solve environmental and developmental problems. So open your arms to this technology, because it is no panacea. Humankind, he warns, has at times used technological innovations carelessly, and we have to guard against this. Well, of course they have. And do you really want them launching swarms of robots across the planet? Well, no, I don't think you do. And out of that home of the robo-bees came a whole manufacturing scenario on how to produce them quickly without having to have somebody with little tiny soldering irons to be able to do it. And that was the origami creation of these robots. They came up with a way to use origami and even self-folding to create these robots, so it didn't require a lot of human intervention. Well, listen to this one, and I'm pretty sure we covered this at the time, but I'm going to do a refresher. October 26, 2016. Swarms of origami robots can self-assemble out of a single sheet. One of the biggest challenges with swarms of robots is manufacturing and deploying the swarm itself. And even if the robots are relatively small and relatively simple, you're still dealing with a whole bunch of them, and every step in building the robot or letting them loose is multiplied over the entire number of bots in the swarm. If you've got more than just a few robots to handle, it starts to get kind of tedious. A dream for swarm robotics is to be able to do away with all that and just push a button and somehow have your swarm magically appear or disappear. And there's another story about that. We're not there yet, but we are getting close. This month, researchers from the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard presented a paper demonstrating an autonomous collective robotic swarm that can be manufactured in a single flat composite sheet. And on command, they rip themselves apart from each other, oh no, fold themselves up into origami structures, and then head off on a mission en masse. There are four robots on the sheet that they are showing, and they're pretty darn near two-dimensional. Want more robots? No problem. Just make the sheet bigger or add more sheets. The sheet itself consists of six layers, which are automatically laser machined, and a pre-stretched polystyrene, or a PSPS layer, which is a kind of memory-shaping polymer in the center, sandwiched between layers of copper circuits etched into a polyimide sheet with paper substrates for support. The polymer is magical stuff. Once it is heated above 100 degrees Celsius, which is done by running a 2.5 ampere circuit through the copper circuitry, it shrinks, which is what powers the self-folding behaviors. Otherwise, each robot consists of some discrete electrical components. But according to the co-author Michael Talley, we are seeing ways to automate the steps of placing these electrical components. Self-folding robots that use shape memory polymers have been done in the past, but the challenge with them has been accurate control of the folding. But to address this issue, Harvard researchers came up with a clever feedback-controlled assembly technique using phototransistors and infrared LEDs to precisely measure the fold angles and greatly improve the repeatability of self-folding. The final thing that sets these folding robots apart is their ability to go from a single continuous sheet to a swarm of discrete robots. Self-folding joints that are designed to prevent folding causes the polystyrene to rip apart instead, allowing each robot to split off by itself, where its vibrational motors can help it buzz along a flat surface seeking sources of light. Guys, this is horrifying. So we have these little mini drone robots that can create themselves. Now, I had mentioned a story about Bill Gates coming out against Stephen Hawking's dire warning of the issue of artificial intelligence and the future of the human race. Bill Gates thinks it's a good thing. We can automate manufacturing and use robotics to cure what ails the world. And while Hawking was, I think, forced to say that AI could be used for good, he also stated that humans need to find a way to control it so it does not become more powerful than humans, as computers can, in theory, emulate human intelligence as well as exceed it. And we read a story back a few weeks ago about in the next 10 or 20 years, AI is going to have an IQ of 10,000. So it's not going to be too long. The University of Cambridge alumni said, and this is Hawking, success in creating effective AI could be the biggest event in the history of our civilization or the worst. We just don't know it yet. So we cannot know if we'll be infinitely helped by AI or ignored by it and sidelined or conceivably destroyed by it, like large swarms of drones seeking out insurgents. Now, there was one other story that I thought I had here. Here it is. This is the Japanese bees. Straight out of Black Mirror. Japan has created Black Mirror-inspired bee drones. Oh, how exciting. Accidentally rediscovered. In the final episode of Netflix Black Mirror, the government claims to be using autonomous drone insects to counteract the collapse of the bee population. Spoiler alert, they're lying. You know, I got to tell you, when I mentioned this episode before, when I saw it, I was really freaking out. And it is soon discovered that the bee drones are actually being used for mass public surveillance. Worse, the drones are programmed to kill, and the deaths are linked to a website promoting a game of consequence where Twitter users can vote to kill one hated public figure using the hashtag #death2. Now similar drones are coming to Japan without all the government secrets and Twitter deaths, we assume. Japan's insect-sized drones were turned into artificial pollinators with the help of coating a horsehair and an iconic sticky gel. The drones work like bees, and they use their hairs to pick up pollen from one flower and deposit it to another. And researchers from Japan actually discovered that this iconic gel accidentally, and then they published their work in the journal Chem. Back in 2007, one of the researchers was working on a possible liquid electrical conductor, and one attempt to do so produced a wax-like sticky gel. The gel was shelved after Miyako considered it a failure, but it was rediscovered after a decade during a lab cleanup, and to Miyako's surprise, the gel remained unchanged. This project is the result of serendipity, he says. We were surprised that after 8 years, which in this case, this is 10 years. Now, this is from February 9th, 2017, so I don't know how since 2007 to 2017 there was 8, but that was 10 years. The iconic gel didn't degrade and was still so viscous. Conventional gels are mainly made of water and can't be used for a long time, so we decided to use this material for research. Miyako tested the pollen-grasping abilities of the gel by coating ants with it, which she then left to roam free in a box of tulips. Researchers observed that the ants coated with the gel were able to collect more pollen than those that weren't, and in addition, the separate test applying the gel to houseflies revealed that it changed colors when exposed to different sources of light, potentially giving it camouflage effects that can help an artificial pollinator avoid predators or people like you who think it is spying on you. And with the gel tested and proven to be sticky enough, the next thing to do was to look for the artificial pollinator. Miyako found a $100 four-propeller drone and gave it a fuzzy bee-like exterior. And this was the team's colleagues who decided to use the horsehair on the drone surface. And these bristles gave more surface area for the pollen to attach to and at the same time provide an electric charge that kept the pollen in place with static electricity. The drones were tested on Japanese lilies, and with the team then flying them remote control, the drones would pick up pollen on one flower and then flew to another flower to deposit the pollen. The findings, which have applications for agriculture and robotics, among others, could lead to the development of artificial pollinators and help counter the problems caused by the declining honeybee population. We believe that robotic pollinators can be trained to learn pollination paths and using global positioning systems and artificial intelligence. And as the bee enters the endangered species list in the United States, these natural pollinators will need all the help that they can get. So look out. Artificial pollinators can lessen the burden of modern agricultural demands, giving the bees breathing space to recover their numbers. And hopefully these drones won't turn out the way their Black Mirror counterparts did. But we can worry about that later. Yeah, let's just worry about it later. But for now, getting these drones out there just to see how much they could help will keep the world pollinated. So guys, this is really coming. And who says it's not going to be self-origami, self-folding, assembling swarms of these things at some point in the not too distant future. Now, we had talked about Boston Dynamics, speaking of robots, being now under the guise of SoftBank from Japan, releasing a brand new version of their Mini Spot, which is their quadruped that acts very sleekly like a cat. I got to tell you, when you watch the video, it's a really scary looking robot. Remember, this is all going on in a war for technology and artificial intelligence, and whoever comes up with the best discoveries is going to rule the world. And don't think that these spots and big dogs and all these other Atlas robots aren't going to be used for the military at some point in the future. Well, China had to one-up us. They now have a robotic startup that wants to be the Boston Dynamics of China. Of all of the four-legged robots in the lab all around the world, few inspire more awe and reverence than Boston Dynamics quadrupeds. And there's a picture of the Chinese replica. Chinese roboticist Xing Wang. Xing Wang has long been a fan of Big Dog, Alpha Dog, Spot, and Mini Spot, as well as other robots that Boston Dynamics has famously introduced over the years. Now Wang, with funding from a Chinese angel investor, has founded his own robotics company called the Unitree Robotics, based in Hangzhou, outside of Shanghai. Wang says his plan is to make legged robots as popular and as affordable as smartphones and drones. Unitree's first robot is a four-legged robo-dog called Leiko, which the company announced this week. The name comes from Leica, which is the Soviet space dog, which Wang admires as a symbol of, quote, human exploration of the unknown. Leica is designed as a research platform for scientists and roboticists, but Wang hopes science museums and robot enthusiasts may also want one. With further improvement, the robot could be used in applications like package delivery. He says the robo dog's going to be delivering to your door. And as a grad student at Shanghai University, Wang and his advisor, Jia Winchan, had a quadruped with 3 degrees of freedom legs that could walk forward, backward, sideways, and also over rough terrain. Boston Dynamics' machine served as an inspiration, but Wang wanted to make a quadruped robot simpler and smaller so that they can help ordinary people with things like carrying objects or as companions. Oh my God, a robot dog companion. So for now, Leiko can't do much on its own. The robot is currently not autonomous yet, and it needs to be remotely controlled using a Wi-Fi enabled controller. It doesn't carry stereo cameras yet or LiDAR sensors, though users can easily integrate additional modules, says Wang. Unitree created the robot's mechanical structure, control system, and motion control algorithms from scratch, so they didn't rip it off from Boston Dynamics. No lawsuit needed. And it has also designed its own custom motors, drivers, and force sensors for the robot. Leiko will initially sell for between $20,000 and $30,000, but Wang hopes to bring the price down with further refinements and higher volumes. Of all the tricks that Leiko can do, Wang's favorite is the robot's ability to remain stable on uneven surfaces, even when kicked. And remember, when we read about the Boston Dynamics one, they had not shown that robot being kicked in the video, and they noticed that in the story. So Wang's robot does one better, and the actual performance, he says, is surprisingly good. And Wang says of the robot's control of its algorithms, math is wonderful, he says, laughing evilly. I mean, guys, this is coming, and this is what's really frightening. What are we going to do when our world is filled not only with swarms of flying drones and different types of robots and robo-bees landing all over our crops and our food supplies doing who knows what, but what happens when nanobots are being injected into our blood to cure cancer? We've read about that before, legions of nanobots, and to clean up ocean pollution. June 9, 2016, nanobots are waiting in the wings to cure cancer and clean up ocean pollution, and this would be using swarm technology. In 1956, Arthur C. Clarke wrote The Next Tenants, considered to be the first work of a fiction broadly describing what is today known as nanotechnology. Nanotechnology has never gotten old for fans of science fiction, and in the ensuing decades, a slew of titles in prose or on the silver screen were created, all covering aspects of tiny machines operating at a nanoscale. Before we discuss modern nanotechnology and its new uses, let's talk about the scale itself. How big is a nanometer? Well, to put things into perspective, consider the illustration below. My eyes are kind of old, and I can't zoom in here, but it's really, really, really tiny. One nanometer will hold 10 atoms of helium, as well as the Zika virus. Will hold 10 atoms of helium, and a Zika virus itself is 40 nanometers in diameter. Comparatively, the human hair is 75,000 nanometers in diameter. And yes, the nanoscale is incredibly small, so it's smaller than a virus. Still, if you've ever been sick, you know just how powerful small organisms like viruses and bacteria can be. And inside your body, these living or semi-living organisms do all sorts of damage, from reprogramming your cells, yes, especially if it's an adenovirus loaded with CRISPR, to producing toxins, laying waste to your immune system, and worse. Modern science has enabled us to understand how these minuscule organisms work, and as a result, scientists can now produce increasingly more complex nanomachines. Remember a while ago, we had read about a DNA nanobot that they had fully programmed, and it could lift things. It had arms and legs and do all kinds of stuff. It was really kind of nutty. So although they are still in a research and development phase, their potential has already been tapped to a degree, providing a glimpse into what their future applications may be. And here are some of them. Nanobots to fight cancer. A team of scientists from Israel's Bar Ilan University started human trials, including drug-delivering nanobots back in early 2016. So human trials. And the bots are made of a specially folded DNA. These are those DNA bots that serves as a vessel for the cancer-treating drugs. Unlike chemotherapy and radiation therapy, which causes damage to healthy and cancer cells alike, DNA nanobots attack selectively and precisely. And only when they encounter a cancerous cell do they open up and release their payload, maximizing efficiency while greatly reducing the damaging effects of the drug with the drugs of the surrounding tissue. To repair the cancer-induced tissue damage, nanobots can connect, forming physical bridges from one end of the damaged tissue to the other, guiding the regeneration process along enlarged areas of the body. This feature could be used to expedite the healing of muscle tissue as well as the possible reparation of a spinal cord. Red blood cells 2.0 is another one. These nanobots, dubbed respirocytes, and I thought these were the ones that they were talking about using to allow people to go underwater without needing breathing apparatus. They were dubbed respirocytes by theorist Robert Freitas, and we had heard an interview with him before. He's a friend of the father of nanotechnology. Oh, if I can even remember his name. Oh, somebody in chat, do you remember his name? What was his name? We've talked about them a whole bunch of times. I don't know. I remember. Could beat your regular blood cells at their own game. Within their spherical shell, they would hold 236 times more of the pressurized oxygen and carbon dioxide, transferring them from lungs to tissue and vice versa. And if these red blood cell 2.0s would be replaced by respirocytes, you would become almost superhuman. How so? In a single breath, you could dive for hours or run at top speeds for 50 minutes. And in a heart attack victim, they could survive for hours, enabling him to reach the hospital in time for treatment. These artificial red blood cells are still very much in the realm of theory, and it'll take quite some time before we see the first prototypes. There's also another one, and that would be a micro robot to help with eye surgery. Oh no, don't get your LASIK. Using complex electromagnetic systems called octomags, scientists at ETH Zurich have been able to steer a microbot within 5 degrees of freedom, and guided by non-uniform magnetic fields, the microbot is capable of traversing the intraocular space that is inside of your eye, performing delicate retinal procedures with minimal damage caused to the surrounding tissue. Although this non-autonomous microbot is well above the nanoscale at 500 micrometers, it is amazing what can be accomplished today at such a small size factor. They could also use nanobots to suck up ocean pollution. Let's let them go in these seas. The world's seas are in a horrible state. Now let's help with conservation. At least 8 million tons of plastic leak into the ocean every year, and by 2050, it'll weigh more than the global fish population, according to the World Economic Forum. While a newly discovered fungus actually thrives on eating the stuff, well, let's let it loose in the ocean. There's another dangerous pollutant we need to be aware of, and that would be heavy metals. They are not only killing fish and damaging their DNA, but they also accumulate in tissues, and that means that by eating fish, you're also enjoying their heavy metal diet. To respond to this threat, scientists at the Max Planck Institute for Intelligent Systems in Stuttgart, Germany, have designed a three-layer heavy metal-eating nanobot. The outer graphene oxide layer absorbs lead. The middle layer affects their movement, and it's composed of nickel, which is susceptible to magnetic manipulation. Well, the next they're going to be putting in the Detroit drinking water to get the lead out. And after the lead has been absorbed, the nanobot swarm returns, and its content is then received and recycled. And during testing, the nanobots were fast and efficient, managing to clean 95% of the lead from the polluted water. The same principle could be used to absorb other heavy metals. What about the mercury? So what do you think about nanobots and their various applications? Let me know in the comments below. And I don't know, there really isn't too much in there, but people seem to think that this stuff is all good, guys. It's not good. What's going to happen when it not only becomes a part of our medicine and the medical industrial complex, but what happens when they start putting intelligence into our medications? Well, I ran across a story that we've talked about before, swallowable pills. We were also talking about mental health and being able to diagnose mental health issues. Well, now listen to this. The FDA, as of November 15th, yesterday, 2017, has approved a trackable digital pill that delivers schizophrenia medication, which is completely unprecedented and controversial. The FDA has announced its first ever approval, and there were a lot of first evers over the last 24 hours, of a pill with an embedded sensor that digitally tracks if a patient has ingested it, ushering in the U.S. a new era of smart pharmaceuticals and medical surveillance. The treatment called Ambify MySight is essentially a clever delivery system for the antipsychotic aripiprazole, which is used to treat schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And now for the very first time, doctors prescribing this drug will know firsthand if their patients are actually taking it. And soon, it's not going to be your doctor via smartphone. It's going to be the little mini drone that comes by and scans whatever this is, probably some sort of Wi-Fi signal, to see whether or not you've taken your drug to tamp down on your upper thinking abilities. And if not, you're going to get a shot from your little mini robo-bee. I don't know, guys. When I think about this stuff, my mind goes into like fast forward as to what these potentially mean for the future. And none of this is looking good at all to me. Being able to track the ingestion of medications prescribed for mental illness may be useful for some patients, says the FDA's director of psychiatric drug evaluation. The FDA supports the development and the use of new technologies and prescription drugs, and is committed to working with companies to understand how technology might benefit patients and prescribers. Remember, we read a lot yesterday about the 21st Century Cures Act, as well as the 21st Century Cures Act. And what was the other one? Oh, I don't remember. There were two of them where there was all talking about mental health and mental health surveillance. Well, this is going to play right into that. Ambify, MySight's tracking system, is centered around a tiny ingestible sensor about the size of a grain of sand called an ingestible event marker, made from a safe level of copper, magnesium, and silicon. And once the pill and the ingestible event marker are swallowed, the stomach acid activates the sensor, sending an electrical signal to a wearable patch worn on the patient's chest. The patch then records the date and time the pill was ingested and relays this information to doctor's smartphone. Users of the application, including the patient but any other authorized doctors or family members, can then check in on a patient's ingestion data of their mental meds, keep direct tabs on the timely swallowing of their oral medications in private like never before. In other words, that old hide-the-pill-under-your-tongue trick will not be working here. The smart pills manufacturer Otsuka, which makes Ambify, and Proteus, which is the developer of the ingestible event marker technology, build their new innovation as the, quote, first digital medicine system, and they say it will make it easier for caregivers to objectively monitor patients' adherence to their, non-voluntary medical regimens. And while there is no research yet to indicate the ingestion tracking system actually improves patients' compliance in taking their medications, the companies are hopeful that it might do just that, in which case schizophrenia could potentially be helped to mitigate the symptoms of 1.1% of all Americans with the illness. But some experts are concerned about the psychological ramifications of a drug that essentially acts as a tattletale if you don't take it right away, especially considering the target market for aripiprazole. Many schizophrenia patients don't take their meds because they don't like the side effects, or they don't think that they have an illness, or because they have become paranoid about the doctor or the doctor's intentions, says psychiatrist Paul Applebaum from Columbia University to the New York Times. And I would agree with that. I actually question doctors' intentions at times. There have been many times in my life that I have had some sort of procedure or drug that I have been given that after the fact you find out that, oh, you shouldn't have taken that because it's caused all kinds of problems. And maybe you're even being used as part of a research project. Well, I wouldn't trust them. I mean, pay attention to what they say, but I don't know. Giving me a pill to track me doesn't seem like something that I would want to be doing. A system that will monitor their behavior and send signals outside of their body and notify their doctor? You would think that whether in psychiatry or in general medicine, drugs for almost any other condition would be a better place to start than a drug for schizophrenia, he says. Their concerns were shared by fellow Columbia University psychiatrist Jeffrey Lieberman, who likened Ambify's MySight to a, quote, biomedical big brother, unquote, noting that the irony in it being given to people with mental disorders that can include delusions. Yet the ultimate impact of an embedded drug monitoring system like this goes well beyond the treatment of schizophrenia and mental illness. Non-adherence to recommended medication taking patterns in the U.S. has been estimated to be costing the insurance companies $1.5 billion annually. So there are important economic factors behind the FDA's approval. Take your medication or we're going to know about it. But while the Ambify MySight may be the first of its kind of these drugs, it almost definitely will not be the last. With reports, the FDA is anticipating a coming wave of such self-monitoring medications. So if so, we could soon be looking at a new level of data-driven surveillance in the healthcare sector, bringing up all kinds of questions and concerns about ethics, privacy, personal rights, and whether this kind of ingestion tracking can truly be safeguarded in the interest of the patient. We have seen time and time again that stuff that's being transmitted ends up in the hands of people it shouldn't, says pharmaceutical policy researcher Walid Gilag from the University of Pittsburgh. There are real concerns about data security, he says. But before we have all the answers to these questions, Ambify's MySight is expected to hit the market sometime in 2018. And for better or for worse, the seeds of snitch medication will have been planted. What do you think of them apples? So they're going to be able to track, bag, and tag, not only if you've taken your medication, but we'd also read about some stuff where they could track what is in your digestive system with some of those smart bacterias that they are working on for living therapeutics. So now here's another first time ever, or so they say, not down a deep, long, dark hallway, AP exclusive, U.S. scientists try the very first gene editing in the body. Thank you to Lady Pitbull for this one. Oakland, California. This is out of AP, and I think this was dated yesterday. Scientists, for the very first time, have tried editing a gene inside of the body in a bold attempt to permanently change a person's DNA to cure a disease. The experiment was done Monday in California on a 44-year-old man named Brian Matus. Through an IV, he received billions of copies of a corrective gene and a genetic tool to cut his DNA in a precise spot. But guess what? It wasn't CRISPR. Oh, no, no. It was a precursor to CRISPR called zinc nuclease fingers, which wasn't as accurate as CRISPR, and even CRISPR has its issues with off-target cutting. It is kind of humbling, he says, to be the first to test this, and he has a metabolic disease called Hunter syndrome. I am willing to take that risk, and hopefully it'll help me and other people, so I just step right up to be your guinea pig. Signs of whether it is working will come in maybe a month, and tests will show for sure in 3 months. And if it is successful, it could be a major boost to the fledgling field of gene therapy. Scientists have edited people's genes before, altering cells in the lab and then returning them to the patient. There are also gene therapies that don't involve editing DNA. But these methods can only be used for a few types of diseases, and some giving results that may not last, while others supply a new gene like a spare part, but it can't control where it inserts it in the DNA, possibly causing a new problem like cancer. Whoops. This time, though, the gene tinkering is happening in a precise way inside of the body while the guy is walking around, and it is like sending a mini surgeon along to a place that the new gene will be needed in exactly the right location. We cut your DNA, we open it up, we insert a gene, we stitch it back up, and then there is invisible mending, says Dr. Sandy McCray, president of Sanguamo Therapeutics, which is the company testing for two metabolic diseases in hemophilia. It becomes part of your DNA, and then it is there for the rest of your life. Guys, they're trying to normalize this technology. They want people to be taking their CRISPR pills, and we already read about swallowable CRISPR, but there are a lot of other ways they can get CRISPR into your body, even through an adenovirus that you can inhale or touch and get into your eye or whatever. You are really toying with Mother Nature, and the risks cannot be fully known, but the studies should move forward because these are incurable diseases, says one independent expert, Dr. Eric Topol of the Scripps Translational Science Institute in San Diego. Protections are in place to help ensure safety, and animal tests were very encouraging, says Dr. Howard Kaufman, a Boston scientist on the National Institute of Health panel that approved the studies. He said that gene editing's promise is too great to ignore, so let's get human guinea pigs. And so far, there has been no evidence that this is going to be dangerous. Now is not the time to get scared. Fewer than 10,000 people worldwide have these metabolic diseases, mainly because they die very